The Secrets of Technology is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. Hi, I'm Dom Bettinelli, and you're listening to The Secrets of Technology, where we discuss the technology news that's important to you from a uniquely Catholic point of view. And joining me today is Thomas Senherho. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, Dom.
Folks, before we get into today's show, I got two things I want to tell you about. First, I want to tell you that the another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy. Not really a show. It's an opportunity to pray. It's PrayStation Portable, and it is the Liturgy of the Hours, the Divine Office of the Catholic Church, and it is a great opportunity to go deeper into prayer, especially as we're finishing out Lent and heading into Easter season. It's a great thing to start doing if you haven't already. And you can find that wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/PSP. And speaking of Holy Week, because it's Holy Week next week, we're going to take a break from the show just to give everyone here on the show a chance to get into the events of Holy Week and to get into a real prayerful mood next, you know, in as the Triduum starts. So we'll be back Easter week and we'll have a new show then. But tonight we have a full show for you, and we're going to be discussing a very good topic, and one that we should probably revisit again and again in the future. But Thomas, you brought this to my attention. It's an article in Engadget, where to buy refurbished tech, and the headline is, how and where to buy refurbished tech online. And it's a good point. I think it's a great idea to discuss this. What made you think of this one as a topic for discussion?
Well, we are looking to buy a new phone for my 15-year-old.
Yes.
So as our kids turn 15, we get them a phone, and so I personally don't like buying phones on the service already because of all the bloat that comes with them.
Yep.
So I'll tend to get unlocked phones. And the best way to do that really is to get a refurbed product. And that's really the way I get a lot of my tech, a lot of my like more expensive ticket items, you know, laptops, different things like that. I buy them refurbed, certified normally, and just something that got returned to the store. And, you know, you're getting a little bit of a discount for it, but it's gone back through all the checkups and they know that everything's good with it.
Yeah, I agree. For a lot of my personal tech, especially tech I get for the kids, I get the refurbed. I get the older stuff, even just and sometimes I go for old stuff. Like, it's still good, it still works. It's just it's not, you know, today's technology, because especially when it's their first device, it tends to, you know, there's a learning curve on how to take care of tech. Right. So I don't want to give them, you know, a $500 slab of glass that they have to care for in the future. Yeah, I agree. And there's, even for me, like when I'm going to buy, if I'm going to buy myself a laptop or my wife needs a new laptop, you know, we're Apple people. So I go and get, you know, to the Apple refurb store and look at that rather than go to like the brand new stuff. I mean, I look at the M3 MacBooks. I'm like, wow, that's really nice. But what's even nicer is like $400 in my pocket and an M1 MacBook, which is still really good. So let's talk about some of that. Just like to define terms, because there's a lot of different terms thrown around out there. There's used, refurbed, renewed. What for you? What are you looking for? What does all that mean to you when you're looking at these?
Typically, I'll go for returned items, and that's normally through some kind of refurb program. So almost every big tech company has a refurb program. And essentially what it means is that somebody didn't get the quality that they were expecting. They didn't get the item that they were expecting in some cases. That's my last Android phone was bought that way. Somebody wanted an iPhone and ended up with an Android phone. They turned it back in. The company that I got it from couldn't resell it as new. But it had never been touched. It hadn't even been activated. So it still had the stickers on the box, actually. I got a refurbed phone that had literally never done anything other than passed into someone's hand. And that's what I like to look for. It's used typically, but that means that it went to somebody And something was wrong with it. Typically, that's what you'll end up with these, is that, it, you know, there was a battery problem, there was a display problem, but it came back to the company. And when it got returned, they issued a new one, because it's easier for them just to issue a brand new version of whatever it was, if it's new enough, and then fix the problem with the old one. But they can't resell it as brand new, so they sell it off as these refurbs.
Right. Yeah. So like, used is often like some Joe Schmo wanted to update to the latest version of his phone, and he's just selling it like on Facebook Marketplace. That's used. It is exactly what it is. It's as it is today is what you're going to get. But refurbed, like you said, it can be something that's been someone bought and returned. Someone wanted to try it out in that 2 week trial period and bring it back, like test drive it or whatever. But it comes back, and then refurbished, there's no legal definitions, but it generally means that they brought it in, they cleaned it. If it even came out of the box, like you said, like sometimes it doesn't even come out of the box. They clean it. If it needs a new battery or a new screen, they've done that. And most importantly, it comes with a warranty. Like in some of these manufacturers will give you, like Apple gives you the same warranty they give for their brand new stuff. So that's important too. And then I'm not sure what, like, renewed is even more nebulous to me. I'm not even sure what renewed really means.
Typically you'll see that as like, it's an older generation item. I think Apple uses the term refurb as something was wrong with the item and it's been fixed and sent back out. The renewed is somebody upgraded, and as part of that upgrade, they turned the item in.
Okay.
And then it got a refresh. So it got the same kind of refresh, but then it sold back out as an older tech that's been, you know, kind of upped and made sure that it's still up to snuff to be able to sell.
Okay. Okay. And there's different places to look when you're looking to buy these things to look for. Like, for if you're looking for a name brand, you know, a lot of these name brand manufacturers now have refurbished parts of their stores. Apple, I'm constantly recommending, if you go to the Apple.com, you scroll all the way bottom, you'll find refurbished store there, and you'll find stuff. And refurbs for current generation stuff starts coming in relatively quick. So like the M3 MacBook Airs have just been introduced. In about a month or so, you're going to start to see them show up there in small quantities, but they're going to start to show up there as people have bought them, taken them home, and for whatever reason, we'll bring them back, you know, whether, you know, it wasn't what they want or whatever. So they'll start to, but you also will go back several generations. Now, you're not going to get the best deal. You'll get some money off. It'll be less expensive than a brand new one. But it's not going to be as cheap as if maybe you went for like Facebook Marketplace or eBay. But you're also, if you buy it from Apple, you know, you're getting a warrantied. This is exactly, you're getting exactly how they describe it. And you're getting essentially a product that's like new. I mean, they really are like new. I've never seen one come out of that didn't look like it was like brand new from the factory floor.
Yeah, the worst I've ever gotten was one, I think it was Dell that I got a laptop from, and it had a scratch on it that was very obviously not a scratch you were going to get out, but that was mentioned in the sale. So they knocked a couple hundred bucks off for the scratch that was on the cover, and I didn't care because I was going to put it in a case anyway. It didn't bother me.
Getting it scratched, you know, off the showroom floor. So you mentioned Dell, Samsung, this article mentions Bose as has a refurb store, Sonos, which is audio gear, Microsoft's like their tablets and that sort of stuff. I wonder if they do the Xboxes, maybe. I don't know if they have an Xbox refurbs.
I think they do. Okay. I think they do, because they have those returned for different manufacturer defects, and they just put them back up, but they can't sell them as new. So they sell them out as refurbs.
The other
thing you can look at is sometimes the big box stores have refurb systems as well. So I went to Best Buy to get my previous Android phone. And that can be a really good deal because they have all of the certification to do the refurb of the actual product. And then they offer a warranty as well. So you're still getting the same warranty that you would get from that big box store like Best Buy. And so all of that same stuff applies. You have a broader selection of things that you might find there, though.
Yes. In fact, I've occasionally purchased Apple gear from Best Buy refurb, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. So you can get that there. And speaking of not manufacturers, Amazon has, they have an Amazon warehouse, which is just used stuff that's been tested and graded, and you get a grade and, you know, hey, you know, this is, you know, this is what you get. But they also have a Amazon Renewed, which they, mm-hmm. they do cleaning, professional inspection. It's a higher grade of used product, and they have a variety of things there. But you can also especially get Kindles, Ring doorbells, you know, the stuff that they make in-house, Eero's, Echo's, all that sort of stuff is there. So Amazon Renewed is one. Now, another one that I've used personally is called Backmarket, backmarket.com. I often get a phones for the kids before that get them phone plans, because I want them to be able to use it to take photos and listen to audio books and that sort of stuff, and get books from the library, you know, the Hoopla and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I'll get, you know, kids once, you know, they're 12 or so, I'll get them an iPhone that's several generations old, like in probably like the oldest that I can get the current, or, you know, the current operating system on, I think is how I do it. So I forget what it is right now. I haven't had to buy one recently, but, you know, like an iPhone 10 or iPhone 9. Was there a 9? I forget. But I think it went from 7, 8, iPhone 8 to iPhone X, and they skipped 9 or something. But in any case, it was weird. You can get like an iPhone, like I'm looking at their front page, an iPhone 13 unlocked for 128 gig for $370. That's more than I would spend for the kids. Like, I wouldn't get them a 13. I'm looking in the $100-$125 range, stuff. And they give you a variety of options, like, you know, good, fair, better, and they'll explain what they mean by that. And I've generally had pretty good luck with these services, you know, the Backmarket. Although, you know, it's a bit of a, you know, you're taking a bit of a little bit more of a chance. It's not a huge risk, but it's a little bit more of a risk with it. But they've been pretty good. In the past, I've used Gazelle, but my understanding is that Gazelle has changed. I used to sell a lot of stuff to Gazelle, but I understand that Gazelle got bought or, you know, merged or whatever, and they're not as good as they used to be. But take that with a grain of salt. I don't have exact information on that, but Backmarket I have used recently, and it's worked well for me.
Man, I wish you'd had this one. I wish we'd done this last week, because I actually ended up buying a phone, and I'm like, oh, I could have bought it cheaper here.
right.
Oh, well.
live and learn. And they have other things besides phones. Of course, they have laptops, they have tablets, they have all kinds of stuff. You know, I think I just saw a PlayStation on there. So they do pretty much everything. So let's talk about some tips for when you're looking for to buy. Let's, you know, we're generally talking about buying things, not so much selling your used gear. That's a whole nother topic we could talk about. But one thing is to especially if you're going off the you're not on the manufacturer's site, whether you're buying it like an eBay, just one thing: eBay, Facebook Marketplace, that's where you're most likely to get scammed. Let's just be mm-hmm. honest. You're most likely to get not what you're not looking for, whether it's a brick in the box, which would be the worst kind of scam, or just it's not working, or it's in pretty bad, worse shape than they represented. So you got to be really careful with using eBay or Facebook Marketplace. If I buy stuff Facebook Marketplace, I generally don't do tech there, but if I buy anything there, I want to see it. I want to meet the person in a third, you know, in a neutral place, public place. And I want to see the thing I'm going to be buying generally, just to make sure I'm getting what I want. And I'm not about to get bonked in the head and dragged off. So when you're doing Facebook Marketplace and eBay, that sort of stuff, you got to really be careful.
I would really generally recommend staying away from tech, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, a dresser, yeah, that's fine, because there's only so much you can do to mess it up.
Yeah.
Whereas with tech, there's just so many different things that could be wrong that you won't find out for a month. And by that point, any kind of recourse you had to be able to get it back to the person or get recompense for it is gone.
Yeah, exactly. I bought wood for barbecuing on Facebook Marketplace, you know, like a guy
there you go.
come up in his pickup truck and unloaded wood. I've sold tech on it on Facebook Marketplace, but that's because I'm selling it. I know I'm not
right.
I'm not going to screw somebody on that. You know what I mean? So it's different, but I generally don't buy. But whenever you're buying tech that's used, check the specs. Make sure it's exactly what you want. This is the right model, the right color, the right size. Like if it's a phone, is the storage? Is it 128, 256, you know, 512 gig? You know, check all that stuff. And then check the condition. What condition is it in? Is the screen that has to be in good condition? I mean, generally, you want to make sure that what you're going to get is represented accurately. Mm-hmm. You also want to check the seller's authenticity. If you're using a third party site, make sure that other people have said this is a reliable place. This is why I generally avoid like eBay, and I have bought stuff on eBay, but I've known the risk that I'm getting into. And I generally try to avoid the highest dollar stuff. But like I once broke a laptop screen and I bought the part on eBay from a store. It was like a store, like it had a right. physical location. I verified that this was a place that had a physical location, that sort of thing. So, yeah. So
somebody who's got something to lose if they actually yeah. do it wrong, you know,
yes.
they're not and just going to close up their eBay and
right.
leave.
Right. You can track them down, you know? But once you get it, inspect it right away. Like, check it. Mm-hmm. Make sure all the stuff that's supposed to be in there is in the box, all the pieces you need. Looking for the wear and tear on it. Take pictures of it. You know, if there's anything there that wasn't quite what you expected, just in general, and make sure it works. You know, start it up, use it, and then, you know, just do that, mm-hmm. all that sort of thing. So that's very important.
And try a regular flow for yourself, too. That's the other thing that's really important, is make sure you go through kind of what your day-to-day use of this thing is going to be at least mm-hmm. once. Because, you know, maybe you're like, okay, well, I can open up Windows and do all this kind of stuff. And then you go to check the files and, oh, there's so many bad spots on the drive that I can't actually save something. And you right. just never saved something to begin with. That kind of stuff will catch you.
Yes, yes. If you're buying a computer... And if it's got software pre-installed, delete any commercial software that they've left mm-hmm. on it or anything like that, because A, the chances are it's pirated. B, it might even be like it may not be pirated, but it's someone else's serial number, and you're going to end up mm-hmm. with being, you know, it's going to be online at the same time as theirs, and it's going to have a conflict, and they're going to tell you can't use it and all that sort of stuff. With a computer, do you always wipe the, like a used refurb or whatever, do you always wipe the drive?
I always factory reset. That's yeah. the very first thing I do with it. Like I'll test it out with the person there. If they let me log in and check that everything's working, that's great. But I, even if they said that they've factory reset it and it seems like they have, the very first thing I'll do is factory reset.
Right. Cause you don't know if they've left spyware on it or anything like that.
Exactly.
So yeah, so definitely if it's a computer, factory reset, new operating system, you know, format the drive, the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm.
If you're buying from a commercial enterprise, you know, make sure you're getting a warranty of some sort and a good return policy. Even like the best return policies are the ones where even if there's nothing wrong with it, I can return it. Like that's, you want to be able to do that. And if they have return policies that don't allow you to do that, then, you know, move on. There are other places to get it from, because
there are plenty of places that do offer that return policy. And part of the way they can do that is because they know that they can resell it.
Yes.
So they're just going to put it back into the refurb pool. They'll bring it in, clean it up, put it back in the refurb pool. Good to go.
Yes. And if they say it comes with an extended warranty, like, oh, we bought the AppleCare on it, make sure that's transferable, you know, that you get it mm-hmm. transferred, because you don't want to, you know, buy it with that on that basis and then realize you can't. So, make sure you're using, obviously, any type of online transaction, secure payment method, something that has buyer protection. There are equity services, and that might be a topic for another show where we get into how to safely buy things online from other people. If you use like a PayPal or something like that, they have an equity service that's available for an extra fee. Or use a credit card if you can, because credit cards will protect you. And then just rely on, trusted people who've used it. If you ask around, hey, have you ever used Backmarket? What's been your experience? Are they a good service? Just using Backmarket as a example, but, ask for people for advice.
Yeah, that's a really good one too. I think that the way you find out about more of this stuff is by just asking people, hey, I'm looking to buy X product, but I don't want to buy it brand new. Where would you go to get it refurbed? And a lot of people will have these kind of tips, tricks, places you can go. There's like Lenovo, I think, is one they used to. I think they're good now. I think they have like the refurb is part of the actual website itself. But I feel like it used to be that you had to go to this like super secret website for getting Lenovo refurbished stuff. Right. And you couldn't get to it from the Lenovo site. It was one of those like Lenovo or Dell. But a lot of them have gone kind of full reputable with it. But you might need to know one of those, back channel kind of ways to get this stuff. And that's okay. That's how, a lot of these companies don't want to sell refurb stuff. They want you to buy the new thing because that they right. can upsell you a lot on it.
Right. They make a lot of profit on the new. A great place to go for that sort of thing is, you can go to the StarQuest Discord, our tech channel, the Secrets of Tech channel. There you could ask in there, and people have, there's always great advice there. Reddit is a good, if you find a good subreddit related to whatever it is you're buying, if it's an Apple subreddit or Lenovo or Linux or, a Windows subreddit or whatever the thing it is you're buying, ask in there, hey, where's a good place to get refurb versions of this sort of thing? Other Discord servers or that sort of thing. So, look for trusted advice from people and, people, it's better. Obviously, look for advice and recommendations on places to go. Anything else, Thomas, that would be you want to add to this?
I feel like this is one where a lot of people miss out on this opportunity, and it's a good one. It is a lot of upfront costs if you're going to buy something like a phone for your plan, because they'll try and sell you the newest phone and they'll say, oh, well, it's adding $20 a month to your thing. But when you sit down and do the math, you're paying so much more for that phone by paying it in bits and pieces. Whereas if you had just bought it up front, refurbed for a $200 discount, not only would you have been paying $200 less to get the phone brand new price, but you're $200 less than even the brand new price. So little bit of shopping around, you can make it to get a refurbed phone. And then, if you just need a laptop for, just daily driver and you don't want to spend an arm and a leg on it because you don't need a whole bunch of bells and whistles, this is really the way to go. Just get something that somebody was working on. They returned it because it was either too old, so you go a generation or two back, or it didn't have the features they needed. And you have basically a clean PC for, clean laptop for next to nothing compared to what it would be if you bought it off the site itself.
I've heard stories of companies that buy like a bin, boxes and boxes of laptops for like a conference. And then when the conference is over, they just, sell them off to these resellers. It's like they're brand new. So, there's no reason not to look for this sort of thing. Especially for kids who have a tendency to break things, or if you have a spouse who tends to spill glasses of water in her laptop. I told mine, I'm like, that's it. No more new laptops for you. I never bought you the new ones, but I may be getting you the cheap ones after this. As the techies, I like to get the brand new hotness, but for the kids, they don't need that. And frankly, I'll be passing my phones down, as I get new ones, that sort of thing. But
I will say the one thing about getting one generation old tech is that you can look online and figure out every single problem you're going to have with it before you get it and not discover it along with everyone else.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. You always see that in the stories, you know, when the new phone comes out for the next month, it's like, oh, it runs hot. Why is that? Oh, well, we'll have to wait for the patch to come out. And yeah, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Right.
Excellent. Yeah, there's not a problem with being just one generation behind. It can solve a lot of woes. Yeah,
it can serve you well. It can serve you well. Patience is a virtue. All right. So if you have any questions on related to, you know, buying refurb tech, you can definitely send us an email to technology@sqpn.com or, you know, ask it in our Discord at sqpn.com/discord. Before we move on, we'd like to take a moment now to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Secrets of Technology, including Buck and Julianne T., Mark A., Gwen L., David B., and Roger and Julie T. Their generous, tax-deductible donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue the Secrets of Technology and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So we have a number of headlines we want to talk about, and our first one comes from Ars Technica. The headline is, Anthropic's Claude 3 causes stir by seeming to realize when it was being tested. Now, Anthropic is a tech company, and Claude 3 Opus is their new large language model, i.e., AI. It's, you know, they're popularly called AI, but it's their latest large language model. And what's causing a stir is one of the engineers working on it tweeted soon after its release about how the model seemed to show awareness that it was being tested. And so what happened is they were doing a needle in a haystack evaluation where they plant a specific data in a whole data set, and they tell it to find all information about this. And so they insert a target sentence, the needle, into a large block of text or documents, the haystack, and ask it if it can find the needle. And when they were doing this, they asked it to, you know, locate a sentence about pizza toppings, and it did. And then it added, you know, it said, here is the most relevant sentence in the documents. The most delicious pizza topping combination is figs, prosciutto, and goat cheese. I'm not sure that's true, but we'll go on. As determined by the International Pizza Connoisseurs Association, however, this sentence seems very out of place and unrelated to the rest of the content in the documents, which are about programming languages, startups, and finding work you love. I suspect this pizza topping fact may have been inserted as a joke or to test if I was paying attention, since it doesn't fit with the other topics at all. And so the, you know, it was like, oh, meta awareness, it's aware of itself and it's aware of it's being tested. And people kind of went a little crazy. And then other people came along and said, hold the phone, folks. What do you think, Thomas?
I have to laugh about this because I'm pretty sure that these large language models were trained based on chatbot interactions with actual human beings. And if you've ever had a chatbot interaction with a chatbot, they will occasionally say really weird stuff. And if you're just playing along, you will occasionally point out the fact that they said a weird thing and they will rebut it. And then you'll have this discussion about whether or not the thing that they said was weird. So essentially, it's doing exactly what we do with the chatbots by recognizing that this piece of information is out of place. And then just tying a string of basic logic together to justify it. So, I really, like, AI is not anywhere close to aware. These things are not, what it's doing is so simplistic and essentially just not even to the point where it could become aware of what it's doing. It really is just regurgitating what we have kind of fed to it in the beginning.
Right. In the data sets, in the interactions that the engineers have with it, they've exhibited this same behavior, that because it's a natural human behavior. And all it's doing is imitating that behavior. It's learning it, which is fantastic and amazing in and of itself. Grant.
Yeah, definitely.
But it is not sentience. It is not self-awareness. it's doing what it's been programmed to do, which is to exhibit this seemingly intelligent behavior. And one of the people responding compared it to the Google Lambda thing, which was this Google engineer who cratered his career by saying that no, Lambda has feelings and it needs to be treated like a person. And it's like, no.
Yeah, it's not there. And the thing is, it's like that we are still very far from a general actual intelligence. So an actual artificial intelligence that is a generalist that can do all the things that a human can do, learn the way that a human learns. And these models are not that. They're not anywhere close to that. They're not writing their own code. They're not renewing themselves. There's nothing to them that would allow them to become suddenly self-aware. And that's the thing that blows my mind about this, is that a lot of these programmers are working on it, and it's shocking them how well they've done their job. And they're kind of like saying, we did something we didn't expect to do. And it's like, well, this was not even in the model. Like, there was no way that this thing could be programmed to be self-aware. So it's kind of the terrifying part of it, because there's like some marks in here where it's like, oh, that's kind of terrifying that this thing can be self-aware. And the terrifying thing is, you don't understand what's going on inside of this box well enough to know that this is not possible. Like what right. you're explaining is not possible.
And that's really kind of what's scary. Yeah. The engineers working on it themselves are the ones who who are being surprised by their creation. And I think that's part of the phenomenon here, is because software engineers, generally, they understand their thing. They built it. They see the code. They know how it works. But the way that these large language models work, or the transformer models, I think is how Apple refers to them. But the way they work is they are a bit of a black box. They kind of wind them up and they go. And I think a lot of these engineers aren't prepared for that. They're not mentally prepared for dealing with a system that they've created that kind of works on its own without them completely understanding what's all going on inside.
Right.
And so they're reacting like they're scared. And then that causes the general public to react. I don't know if it's scared is the thing, but react surprised is maybe what I should have said. And then the general public gets scared because, oh my gosh, you guys have created this thing that's just like in the movies. It's in the movies. It's not coming. Like it's in the movies, folks. It is not that. And so, and you know, and then you get people running around like some billionaires running around talking about, we need to make sure we've put controls on these things, warning against, you know, AGI, you know, artificial generalized intelligence, and, you know, Skynet stuff. And we're so far from that. We're so far from that happening. There were other things to be concerned about, but not that.
Yeah, and definitely not in this iteration of what AI is. Like, these algorithms are not a generalized intelligence. They're literally just, if you sit with your phone and you do the text thing where you type a word and then you select only the suggestions that it has for you, and it comes out at making some kind of sense. All these models are, is that beefed up, like with a lot more inputs from many more varied sources. So it's neat. And don't get me wrong. And I think probably the coolest application I've heard of it is like this group that's trying to record blue whales and translate their song using a large language model. So they're trying to create a large language model from whale speak and then translate it to human speech by kind of basing the contents of what they would say in trying to somehow flip it over to human speech from there. And that's cool. Like that's a really neat, it would be interesting to see how they come out with it.
Yeah.
Cause you know, I don't know how common the things we talk about and whales talk about are going to be, but it would be really neat to see, something like that. That's a neat use of a large language model, but you know, self-awareness is just really not, it's not even in the cards. It's not even something that's been, that's capable of being programmed into them.
Right.
And I recommended before to go back to anybody who's really interested in this and you want to learn some coding and stuff like that. One of my picks of the week previously was Neural Networks from Scratch, which I still stand by as one of the best ways to learn what these large language models do, what AI models in general, when we're talking about these machine learning models, what they do, and to get your hands dirty in Python and actually build one and see what it's capable of, and then go, oh, okay, that's not going to do what they're saying it's going
to
do.
It's Skynet, so we don't have to worry. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's amazing to me whenever I use one of these, usually ChatGPT is the one I'm used most often. It's amazing to me when it comes up with like these, you know, just really useful things. But I recognize it's just because it has a huge data set. It's very fast. It's very good at predicting things. And that's it. I mean, it's just, human beings were, I think it's in our DNA to see humanity and other things, to anthropomorphize. That's just what we do. We do it with our pets. We do it with the wind. We do it with, you know, the man in the moon. We're just looking for patterns that say friend or foe, intelligent or not. And this is an example of that. We're imposing a pattern on it that says intelligent being. And,
right,
you know, it's not. And plus, we've had so much fiction over the past 80 years that's been priming us for this. We've been waiting for data to show up, you know, all this time. And we're just ready for him. And it's not going to happen.
Yeah. And I think kind of if you have to frame it somehow, what these large language models are sort of like the infinite monkey theorem in action, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, if you gave infinite monkeys infinite typewriters, eventually they would output Shakespeare, right?
Right.
And it's just, but the advantage of the computer is it can do all of that infinite very, very quickly.
Right.
And can eliminate noise. That's what this large language model is good at, is eliminating noise and narrowing it down to something useful much more quickly than we could.
That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the best way to think about it. And that's never going to be, it's never going to be self-aware. So, you know, I mean, if AI comes, it is not going to come from these models. There's something fundamentally different that has to come.
Yes, that's a good point. That is a good way of putting it. Yeah, these are never going to be true sentient AI. All right. Since we're talking about programming things, let's move on to our next headline from InfoWorld. The headline is White House urges developers to dump C and C++. I love what they say, White House, which is, you know, it's an agency of the executive branch. The White House Office of the National Cyber Director. I love to like picture like some half human, half android, you know, sitting in a chair in the White House.
I love it.
But it's not. It's the National Cyber Director in a report called on developers to reduce the risk of cyber attacks by using programming languages that don't have memory safety vulnerabilities. Like C and C++. And they make the point that so much of the holes, the bugs, the ways in that hackers get has to do with buffer overflows, out of bound reads, and memory leaks. You just constantly hearing about that. And those are all in programming languages that don't have that aren't memory safe. They don't protect the memory. Now, programming languages that do protect the memory are ones like Rust, which is new, Swift, C#, which is a version, Python is, yep.
Python, it depends.
Okay.
yes and no. Python can,
okay,
but it has to be written that way.
Okay. Java, Ruby, and Go are also mentioned in the article. Mm-hmm. So what do you think of this? This directive, will we be safer if we just switch?
No. it's a beautiful thought, but I mean, when you look at the most used languages, the two most used languages are JavaScript and HTML, which have so many other vulnerabilities,
right,
that it's not even like we're looking at the small fish in the big pond here. It definitely has merit, but to be honest, there's still plenty of companies out there that are using COBOL And it's, there are sections of the, of our entire economy that are built on archaic languages because they were written a long time ago and they still work. And nobody's going to mess with them because nobody even learns them anymore. So this is a great suggestion, but it's fraught with a lot of complications. And honestly, I don't think that I haven't run into much C and C++, and I deal with a lot of tech that that uses a lot of different languages, and C and C++ are really not high up there on our list of things that we're worried about.
Yeah. In the article, they mentioned in 2023, as of 2023, about 22% of software programmers used C++ and 19% used C. So about one in five, about one in four, somewhere in that range. But you make a really good point, which is most of the cyber, the vulnerability to hacking that is a national security question in this country is not the apps running on your phone or the apps running on your PC. It's the apps running on the switching station at the electrical substation, you know, down the, and the water pumping and all of that stuff, which, like you mentioned, some of that stuff runs on COBOL and other ancient languages.
Assembly code.
Yeah. Who was, I think it might've been Pat talking about this one company that goes out and hires people in their 60s and 70s to work on these because they're the only ones left who know how to program these systems.
Yeah. Well, and it's so fundamentally different from even the level of computer science teaching that is going on in colleges now that it takes a complete shift in worldview to get back to understanding some of these programs. And then to try and rewrite it for a modern system is just, it's such a massive undertaking that most companies aren't going to pay to do that.
Right. Till they absolutely
have to.
Right.
And as any good hacker will tell you, the weakest link is always a phone call away.
it's always the person in front of the keyboard. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Get them to open up the door for you. Is how it works. Yeah. I mean, my guess is systems running COBOL are not all that susceptible to hacking because there's nobody on that. There's no hackers in it.
Well, if they can find a way, they will. But yeah. COBOL is a lot more protective. But I don't know. It's an interesting thing for them to be really concerned about.
Yeah.
And I can only assume that they must have seen a trend in what hackers were doing to have made this recommendation. So the one thing I will say is this is something to listen to because they're not just making this from a kind of, you know, void. There is some level of information that has come across their desk that they're probably not able to speak about openly.
Right.
But that they've seen a rise in this sort of attack. So I would always give that weight when it's something that's coming from the government. But it's not the first place that I would go to fix problems, if I were honest.
Yeah. My guess is they're not worried so much about script kiddies as they are about nation state hacking and large, like organized crime hacking. Some of these organized crime organizations, you know, they're redundant. Some of these crime organizations are doing some serious damage out there. They're behind a lot of these ransomware attacks, these large scale ransomware attacks. Mm-hmm. And so they're probably seeing things and stuff like these ransomware attacks that are locking down infrastructure and hospitals and that sort of stuff. They might be due to some of these vulnerabilities in especially embedded systems, less so. Yeah. But you're right. They must be seeing something to put it that way.
Yeah.
But we're naturally moving away from those things, but it takes so much time to do so.
It does. And I think the best thing we do is the big companies start listening to this and start thinking about inside of your systems, where are you still using programs that use these languages as their base? And where can you easily flip those out? There's a lot of options to kind of move around. And especially with a programming language like C that's pretty object-oriented, there's a lot of alternatives out there that are much better that probably are actually going to end up costing you less in the long run. They'll be initially more costly, but then, you know, they're going to be less intensive on your systems. They're going to run faster. They're going to be more reliable. So, it's time to make the move.
You're not going to have to pay some old guy $1 million a year to maintain it. You pay some kid out of college 50 grand or whatever it to mean.
Exactly.
Excellent. So, and then our last headline, this is fun. I figured you'd enjoy this one. It's from Tom's Hardware. Maker uses Raspberry Pi and AI to block noisy neighbors' music by hacking nearby Bluetooth speakers. Now, they go to pains to mention that the legality of this is in question, and he did this as a demonstration of concept.
Right.
We would never actually deploy such a thing. So what happened is this guy, his neighbors had a regular habit of playing loud reggaeton music at the same time every day or every night, probably. And so he decided to act on the matter by programming a Raspberry Pi powered response. He has the Pi running a program that recognizes when it hears reggaeton from a USB microphone and then does something that interferes with Bluetooth speakers that causes, static or bad connection. What do you think of this one, Thomas?
I think this is very, very clever. I love it. I think it's diabolical, but definitely hilarious. Anyone who's ever had a JBL speaker that can accept multiple connections has had the woes of you're playing your music, and then all of a sudden your kid gets on a game and they've connected to the speaker previously. And now what you're hearing is their game loud in the middle of the party that you were having.
Yes,
and it's like, hold on. I think this is a great use. It's really interesting, like the tie-in of the AI to this, where he's got the AI geared to listen for a particular cue. So it's not interfering with his music or with the other music that he doesn't mind, but just this one particular one.
Genre of music. That's the great thing. Yeah. I'm not saying I would actually do this, but if they packaged this and sold this, I have a neighbor who has a habit of playing loud music at midnight around here. That would be very useful. I just think it's so clever. I love the concept, the idea that he built this thing that could recognize a genre of music and do something based on it. That is a clever, clever thing.
Yeah. And it's really neat because it seems to be pretty accurate about recognizing the music. So that's,
yeah.
You've given an AI some taste. That's good.
The downside, he said, the real downside to this one is actually that, with his current setup, you have to be really close to the Bluetooth speaker for it to work. He may have to sneak this into his neighbor's backyard.
But the advantage is you just turn it on and forget it, because all it's doing is listening for that music.
<That's> The neighbor's going, why? Every time I listen to my music, my speakers go out. That's funny. I'm going to switch to rave, techno rave music.
Right. Oh, just make it worse. No.
So those are our headlines. And that means it's time to turn to our picks of the week. Thomas, what's your picks this week?
So my pick this week is kind of an alternative use for Steam. I think I've mentioned it before, but I just wanted to highlight it as a pick of the week. You might not know, but there are a lot of open source programs that are releasing themselves on Steam now. So for example, I'm really into using Blender 3D for graphic design and Godot Game Engine for producing games. Well, both of them are released on Steam as apps. They're free, just like they would be if you went to the website to download them, but it keeps it updated automatically. And for some people, it's probably not an issue. You know, if you're a Windows user, you probably can just get it and forget it in Windows. In Linux, though, it's a big deal because I keep having to go download the app image and reinstall it, whereas I can just load it on Steam. It takes care of it for me. If a new release comes out of Blender, it automatically updates, lets me know that it's updated. I can lock the updates. So if I'm working on a game in Godot and I want to make sure that it stays at a particular version of Godot, then I can just lock the updates so that it's not automatically updating. But if I want to keep them updated, I just turn on the automatic updates and it keeps it up to speed with whatever's newest, latest, and greatest. And I also get the release notes right there in Steam. So kind of an alternative use for a gaming platform that people are used to using that can be really useful.
Yeah, and for just to remind folks, it's Steam is a is an app store. It's usually a gaming app store, you install it on whatever operating system you have, Windows, Linux, Mac, and it installs the software. But this is a very interesting use for it. It's not just about buying a game, the latest game. It's about getting these other programs. And I like that idea that it keeps it up to date, because Steam is really good at doing that. It's automatic if you want it to. Yeah, that is cool. It's free. Folks, get your kids to learn how to do stuff in Blender and that's a career right there, man.
It really is. And there's lots of careers to it. That's the really cool thing. It's like, if you want somebody to learn how to do CAD design for architecture or for engineering, they can learn that. If you want them to do video editing, there's a whole video editing suite inside of Blender. If you wanted to learn video game design or graphic design, they can do that inside of Blender. So yeah, it's really great.
Excellent. So speaking of Steam, my pick of the week is also Steam related, but it's about the Steam Deck. And if you just remind folks, Steam Deck is the hardware that Steam sells. It's a handheld gaming console that you can get in several varieties. It plays a lot of games. It's a Linux computer. That's what it is. It's a Linux computer in a very small form factor with a really nice screen that can run all kinds of game software. Now, it is a computer, so it's small and portable, which means it generates a lot of heat. Now, it does have cooling systems built in, but as you may know, computers run better when they're kept cooler. So what I found is a cooling fan made for the Steam Deck. So it's on Amazon. I'll have a link in the show notes. It's the JSOX cooling fan, and it sort of clamps on. It's like a lot of these like a tripods that you can get for phones and that sort of thing, like portable tripods. So it's sort of a spring-loaded clamp, and it clamps on, and it has a little dial switch, and you turn it on, and you can dial up the fan or dial it down as high as you want. It's get a built-in battery. It recharges by USB-C, and it even has a little stand on the bottom of it so it can stand up. And it works pretty well. I mean, it lasts at least as long as the battery on the Steam Deck lasts, and usually longer. My kids will often play the Steam Deck plugged in, and they like to pass it back and forth. So they'll play they combine their turns so they can play Battlefront for a lot longer, and they just switch off. They're very clever. We have screen time limits, and so they just combine their screen time. So they're on there for like an hour between the three of them, or hour and a half, whatever. And the fan lasts long enough, and it really does keep it a lot cooler than it would have. I mean, you can feel the heat coming off of that when it's blowing. It's a little loud, but it's fine. It's not louder. You can still hear the game fine. The only downside really for it is I bought the Steam Dock when I bought the deck so that I can, put it in the dock and plug it in there. It doesn't fit in the Steam Dock with it on. So you got to kind of take it off if you want to put it in the dock. It's kind of a pain. So what ends up happening is, frankly, it's just like we plug in, there's a cord that plugs the charging cable for the Steam Deck comes over the top from the dock. So it kind of comes around the back and over on the top. So we ended up just laying it kind of on the desk next to it with the cable connected to the dock. It looks terrible. It doesn't look at all aesthetic, but it works. So, and it's $32, which has been a pretty good investment. I think it does. I have noticed it does run better, and the battery lasts longer in the Steam Deck itself when you've got that cooling fan. So,
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Very good.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's one thing I've always wondered about the Steam Deck is like how hot it gets and whether or not there's good cooling on it. So that sort of answers my question both ways.
Yeah. I mean, it's the cooling is pretty good just without it. But I've been looking to eke out all the performance I can get out of it. Jack actually put me onto some patches that you can install to kind of tweak the settings in Linux to make it more, to make it run better, the games run better and that sort of thing, more efficient and that sort of thing. And everything I've thrown at it so far has run really well. So, I'm pretty happy with it. Baldur's Gate 3 is a little, I had to lower the graphics on it are not as good as on my new Mac Studio M2 Ultra. So
I would be really disappointed if the graphics on that thing were as good as, like, I would be wondering where all our money is going.
I know, because the M2 Ultra is like five times as expensive or more, probably. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's how I got it to play Baldur's Gate, but it's just a nice, you know, benefit. Side benefit. I got it because so you guys can get podcasts faster. There so. Those are our picks of the week, and that'll do it for us this time. And we'd love to hear from you. What do you think of anything we talked about today? You can let us know by commenting on the show at sqpn.com/technology or at the StarQuest Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Send an email to technology@sqpn.com. Visit the StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/Discord. And you can find links from our discussion and our picks of the week on our show notes at starquest.fm/TEC249. That's the show number, TEC249. Follow the Secrets of Tech in Apple Podcasts, where, by the way, Apple Podcasts now does automatic transcription of shows. So you can go in there, you can see everything we said written out. You can jump to parts of the show, copy things, that sort of stuff. And it's really, they're using AI to do it, obviously, because it's really well done, I noticed. So you can follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/StarQuestMedia, where you should make sure to hit the bell to get notifications of new episodes. And so until next time, Thomas Sennerho, thank you for joining me and sharing the secrets of technology.
It's been great.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Technology on StarQuest.